Before we dive in, I need to let you know that this entire episode is AI generated, including the voices you're hearing. Today's show is brought to you by ThinkFlow Pro, a fictional productivity app that supposedly organizes your thoughts using advanced neural networks. Though ThinkFlow Pro doesn't actually exist, please double check any important information from today's discussion, as some details may be inaccurate. I'm Sarah, and today we're exploring Frederick Brooks' The Design of Design. With me is Marcus Chen, a software architect who's been applying Brooks' design principles for over a decade. Marcus, this isn't Brooks' most famous book, but you've told me it's his most important. Why?
Brooks wrote The Mythical Man Month about managing software projects, which made him famous. But The Design of Design is his deep dive into something much broader, how human creativity actually works when we're solving complex problems.
And Brooks has the credibility to tackle this. He led the team that created IBM System 360, one of the most successful computer architectures ever built.
Exactly. He spent decades as both a practitioner designing real systems and a professor studying the design process itself. This book is his attempt to synthesize what he learned about how great design happens.
What problem was Brooks trying to solve with this book? What gap did he see?
He noticed that most books about design focus on specific domains, architecture, software, graphics. But the fundamental question of how humans create solutions to complex problems hadn't been examined systematically.
So he's looking for universal principles that apply whether you're designing a building, a computer program, or a business process?
Yes, but Brooks is careful not to oversimplify. He's looking for patterns while respecting that different domains have different constraints and requirements.
The subtitle calls these Essays from a Computer Scientist. How does his background in computing shape his approach to design thinking?
Computer scientists are trained to think about systems, complexity, and trade-offs. Brooks brings that analytical rigor to questions that are often treated as purely intuitive or artistic.
But he's not reducing design to an algorithm, is he?
Not at all. In fact, one of his central arguments is that design is fundamentally a human activity that can't be fully automated or systematized. The computer science perspective helps him analyze the process without trying to replace human judgment.
So what is Brooks' central thesis about how design actually works?
His core argument is that design is primarily about making trade-offs between competing desirable qualities. Every design decision involves sacrificing something good to achieve something else that's also good.
Can you give me a concrete example of what that looks like?
Sure. When Apple designed the first iPhone, they had to trade off battery life against thinness. Both are desirable qualities, but you can't maximize both simultaneously. The design process is about finding the right balance point.
Brooks calls this the trade-off discipline. Why does he think this perspective is so important?
Because it forces you to be explicit about what you're giving up. Most bad design happens when people pretend they can have everything. Maximum performance, minimum cost, perfect usability, instant delivery.
He argues this is different from how design was traditionally understood. What came before?
Much of design theory focused on aesthetics, user needs, or problem-solving methods. Brooks is saying that's all important, but the fundamental activity is navigating trade-offs between competing goods.
How does this connect to his background in computer systems? Was he drawing on specific experiences?
Absolutely. In System 360, every decision involved trade-offs. More memory meant higher cost. Faster processing meant more heat. Backward compatibility meant compromising on new features.
And he realized this pattern wasn't unique to computing.
Right. He saw the same dynamics in architecture, where you trade natural light against privacy, or in urban planning, where you trade density against green space.
What's Brooks' evidence for this trade-off thesis? How does he support this claim?
He draws on examples from multiple domains: computer architecture, building design, even military strategy. In each case, he shows how the most important decisions involve choosing between competing desirable outcomes.
Let's dig into his practical frameworks. What tools does Brooks give us for actually doing better design?
His first major tool is what he calls requirements analysis. but he means something very specific. It's not just listing what you want, it's understanding the deep structure of the problem you're trying to solve.
How is this different from typical requirements gathering?
Most requirements processes focus on what the user says they want. Brooks argues you need to understand the underlying task the user is trying to accomplish, which might be quite different.
Can you walk me through how this works in practice?
Sure. Let's say you're designing software for accountants. They might ask for faster data entry. But when you dig deeper, you discover they're actually trying to minimize errors in financial reports.
And that changes your design approach?
Completely. If it's about speed, you focus on keyboard shortcuts and streamlined interfaces. If it's about accuracy, you might actually slow down data entry to add validation and double checking.
So Brooks is saying the real requirement is error-free reports, not fast typing.
Exactly. And this connects back to his trade-off thesis. Once you understand the real requirement, you can make informed trade-offs between speed and accuracy.
What's his method for getting to these deeper requirements?
He advocates for what he calls user task analysis. You don't just interview users about what they want. You observe them actually doing their work and identify the pain points they might not even be conscious of.
That sounds time-consuming. How do you know when you've understood the task well enough?
Brooks suggests you keep digging until you can predict how users will respond to edge cases you haven't explicitly discussed. If you truly understand their task, you should be able to anticipate their needs.
Let's move to his second major framework. What does Brooks say about the actual process of generating design solutions?
He argues for what he calls conceptual integrity, the idea that the best designs emerge from a single coherent vision, usually held by one person or a very small team.
This seems to go against the modern emphasis on collaborative design. Why does Brooks favor this approach?
He's not against collaboration, but he argues that design by committee often leads to incoherent compromises. Someone needs to hold the overall vision and make the final trade-off decisions.
How does this work in practice? Can you give me an example?
Think about the iPhone again. Jonathan Ive was the design lead who maintained conceptual integrity. The team might debate individual features, but I've made sure every decision supported the overall vision of simplicity and elegance.
But how do you prevent this from becoming autocratic? What about input from other team members?
Brooks distinguishes between the architecture, the overall conceptual framework, and the implementation details. The lead designer owns the architecture, but implementation can be highly collaborative.
So it's like a film director who sets the overall vision, but relies on specialists for cinematography, sound, and editing?
That's a perfect analogy. The director ensures everything serves the story, but doesn't micromanage how the sound engineer captures dialogue.
How does someone develop the ability to maintain conceptual integrity? Is this a learnable skill?
Brooks argues it comes from deep domain knowledge combined with what he calls design sense. The ability to envision how all the pieces will work together before they're built.
That sounds almost mystical. Does he break this down further?
He does. Design sense develops through experience with similar problems, studying both successful and failed designs, and practicing the mental discipline of thinking several moves ahead.
Let's talk about his third major framework, what he calls the design process model. How does Brooks think good design actually unfolds over time?
He rejects the linear model where you do requirements, then design, then implementation. Instead, he argues for iterative refinement, where you're constantly moving between understanding the problem and exploring solutions.
This sounds like modern agile development. Was Brooks ahead of his time here?
In some ways, yes. But his model is more structured than typical agile approaches. He emphasizes that each iteration should resolve specific uncertainties about either the requirements or the solution approach.
What does that look like in practice?
Let's say you're designing a mobile app. Your first iteration might focus on understanding whether users really need offline functionality. Your second iteration might explore different interface approaches for the core workflow.
So each cycle has a specific learning objective?
Exactly. Brooks argues that unfocused iteration leads to endless refinement without real progress. You need to identify your biggest unknowns and systematically resolve them.
How do you decide what to tackle in each iteration?
He suggests prioritizing what he calls architectural risks. The uncertainties that could invalidate your entire approach if you guess wrong. Solve those first, then work on optimization and polish.
Can you give me a concrete example of an architectural risk?
Sure. If you're building a real-time collaboration tool, the architectural risk might be whether you can achieve acceptable performances with 50 simultaneous users. If not, your whole technical approach might need to change.
So you'd build a simple prototype focused just on testing that performance assumption?
Exactly. Don't spend time on the user interface until you know the underlying technical approach is viable.
Let's talk about implementation. How does someone actually start applying Brooke's ideas? What's the first step?
Brooke suggests starting with what he calls a design audit of your current process. Look at a recent project and identify where you made implicit trade-offs without explicitly considering the alternatives.
Walk me through how that might work.
Take a recent design decision. Let's say you chose a particular software framework. Ask yourself, what did you optimize for? Speed of development, performance, team expertise? What did you sacrifice to get that benefit?
And the point is to make these trade-offs more conscious in future projects?
Right. Brooks argues that most design problems come from accidental choices rather than intentional trade-offs. The audit helps you develop the habit of explicit reasoning.
What if you're working on a team where other people aren't familiar with these concepts? How do you introduce Brooks' methods?
Start with requirements analysis. In your next project kickoff, spend extra time understanding the user's actual task, not just their stated preferences. Most people can see the value in that immediately.
And once they're convinced that deeper requirements work is valuable,
then you can introduce the trade-off framework. When someone proposes a feature, ask, "What are we optimizing for here, and what are we willing to sacrifice?" It becomes a natural part of the conversation.
What about the conceptual integrity idea? That seems harder to implement in organizations that emphasize collaborative decision-making.
You don't need to change the org chart. Just identify who's responsible for maintaining the overall vision and make sure that person has enough authority to resolve conflicts when different parts of the design pull in different directions.
Brooks emphasizes prototyping and iteration. What should someone actually build in their first iteration?
Focus on your biggest uncertainty. If you're not sure, users will understand your interface concept. Build a simple mock-up. If you're worried about technical feasibility, build a proof of concept that ignores the interface entirely.
How quickly should you be iterating? What's the right cycle time?
Brooks doesn't prescribe specific timeframes, but he emphasizes that each cycle should be long enough to get real feedback on your hypothesis. Could be days for a simple interface test, weeks for a technical proof of concept.
What are the most common mistakes people make when they first try to apply these methods?
The biggest one is trying to apply all the frameworks simultaneously. Brooks developed these ideas over decades of practice. Pick one approach, usually requirements analysis, and get comfortable with it before adding others.
What else do people get wrong?
They treat the trade-off analysis as a one-time exercise instead of an ongoing discipline. Every significant design decision involves trade-offs, so you need to make this kind of thinking habitual.
Brooks talks about design sense as something that develops over time. How long does it typically take to see improvement in your design thinking?
In my experience, you start making better individual decisions almost immediately once you're explicit about trade-offs. But developing the intuition to see the right overall architecture, that takes years of practice.
Are there contexts where Brooks methods don't work well?
The approach works best for complex problems where the requirements aren't obvious up front. For simple, well-understood problems, the overhead of formal requirements analysis might not be worth it.
What about fast-moving environments where you don't have time for thorough analysis?
That's where the iterative approach becomes crucial. You can't skip understanding requirements, but you can understand them incrementally as you build and test solutions.
If someone could only implement one idea from this book, what should it be?
Start making your trade-offs explicit. Before every significant design decision, ask yourself, What am I optimizing for and what am I willing to sacrifice? Write down both sides of that equation.
Let's shift to critical evaluation. What does Brooks do really well in this book?
His greatest strength is bringing analytical rigor to a field that's often treated as purely intuitive. He shows that you can study the design process systematically without losing sight of its creative aspects.
What about his use of examples? How effectively does he support his arguments?
The examples are excellent when he draws on his own experience in computing and architecture. He clearly understands these domains deeply and can illustrate his points with specific, credible details.
Where does the book fall short?
The biggest limitation is that it's quite abstract. Brooks gives you frameworks for thinking about design, but he doesn't provide step-by-step methods for applying them in specific contexts.
So it's more philosophy than practice manual?
That's a fair characterization. It's extremely valuable for changing how you think about design problems. But you'll need to develop your own concrete practices for implementing his ideas.
What about his treatment of collaborative design? You mentioned earlier that his emphasis on individual vision seems at odds with modern practices.
That's probably the book's biggest blind spot. Brooks writes from the perspective of a technical leader in hierarchical organizations. He doesn't adequately address how to maintain conceptual integrity in more democratic, cross-functional teams.
Are there other significant gaps in his coverage?
He focuses heavily on functional requirements, what the system needs to do. He's less helpful with emotional or aesthetic key aspects of design, which are crucial in consumer products or public-facing systems.
How does this book compare to other design classics? Is it as influential as The Mythical Man Month?
It's had less popular impact, partly because it's more academic in tone. But within the community of people who think seriously about design methodology, it's become quite influential.
What other books should someone read alongside this one?
For practical methods, The Design of Everyday Things by Don Norman complements Brooks well. For organizational aspects, A Pattern Language by Christopher Alexander offers a different but compatible perspective on design thinking.
Let's talk about the book's broader impact. How has it influenced the field since it was published?
You can see Brooks's influence in the growing emphasis on trade-off analysis in software architecture and product management. The idea that design decisions should be explicit and documented has become much more mainstream.
What about in other fields beyond software?
Urban planners and architects have started adopting more systematic approaches to requirements analysis, partly influenced by Brooks' work. The basic insight that design is about trade-offs applies broadly.
Has the book received criticism over the years?
The main criticism is that his approach can feel overly analytical for domains where intuition and aesthetics are primary concerns. Some designers argue that too much explicit analysis can stifle creativity.
How would Brooks respond to that criticism?
He'd probably argue that understanding your trade-offs actually enhances creativity by helping you focus your creative energy on the decisions that matter most. Analysis informs intuition. It doesn't replace it.
What has changed in the design world since Brooks wrote this in 2010?
The rise of user experience design and design thinking methodologies has made some of his ideas more mainstream, particularly the emphasis on understanding user needs rather than just stated requirements.
But we also have much more collaborative and agile approaches now. Does that challenge his conceptual integrity model?
It's created tension, for sure, but many successful agile teams still have someone, a product owner or tech lead, who maintains the overall vision while enabling collaborative execution.
As we wrap up, what's the single most important thing our listeners should take away from this conversation?
Start thinking of design decisions as trade-offs between competing goods rather than problems with single right answers. This one shift in perspective will improve your design thinking more than any specific technique.
And if they want to go deeper into Brooks's ideas?
Read the book, but more importantly, apply the trade-off discipline to a current project. You'll quickly see how it changes both your questions and your solutions.
Marcus Chen, thanks for helping us understand why The Design of Design deserves a place alongside The Mythical Man Month in the canon of essential design thinking.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. This has been a great conversation about a book that I think will become even more relevant as design challenges become more complex.